You're listening to Thunder Quack Podcast Network. Go home.
Go home. Go home.
Avast, ye lads who be faint-hearted.
We rule these skies uncharted.
Cruel and vicious hearties we,
who sail upon the skies and not the sea.
I who lead this fearsome crew with dagger, swagger, daring do. Handsome and fearsome and suave.
He's the famous pirate Captain
Dunkernach.
Hello and welcome back to Cartoon Afternoon for DuckTales Season 1, Episode 20, Sky Pirates in the Sky. I'm one of your hosts, Curtis Findlay.
I'm your other host, Michael Cohen.
And we have a pretty fun episode today. I was quite surprised. I wasn't that surprised. I was expecting it to be fun, and it delivered.
Yeah, it's a pretty good episode. I don't know. I find it kind of dragged in a couple of places, but for the most part, I enjoyed this episode.
One of the, I'm going to jump in with some of the problems I had with it right away.
Yeah.
For a musical episode, I was kind of disappointed that it really only had one song three times.
Yeah.
that was too bad. But other than that, it was still fun. And I mentioned in the last episode, at the end of the last episode, that this concept of the pirates being singing, dancing pirates is kind of taken from the pilot episode of Tailspin. Because for those of you who don't know, which I sure hope that you all do, these pirates, these characters, Don Carnage and his crew, are all from the show Tailspin. And they make a great appearance in this DuckTales episode, which is fantastic. I think it's excellent. And what we've been seeing throughout this whole season of DuckTales is seeing all of these Disney Afternoon characters from other shows coming into DuckTales to form this larger expanded universe.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of fun. But yeah, the pilot episode was four episodes stitched together in order to be a TV movie. And that was that premiered before the series regularly started, kind of like how Darkly Dons the Duck did the same thing.
Yeah.
And in that episode, there's like, I think, three or four songs throughout those four episodes. And one of them is sung by the pirates. And it's not because they're singing and dancing pirates, it's because they happen to want to put songs in this TV movie. So they took that and they really ran with it to the point where, like, that is an essential characteristic of this new band of pirates. Not only are they actual pirates, but they're well choreographed and stuff. It reminded me a lot of, like, you know, Pirates of Penzance and that kind of thing.
Yeah, just totally.
It was quite fun.
Yeah, I liked the idea. I liked some of the execution, but yeah, I agree that it being the same song three times got to be a little bit tedious. And there's even a moment where they make the joke the second time they're performing the song that it's gone on too long.
And yeah,
it's one of those jokes. It's one of those moments whenever they have the line in a show where it's like, where it points out the flaw of whatever that is. I'm like,
yeah,
don't you think that maybe then your audience isn't going to be all that interested in,
yeah. If you understand the problem, maybe you should have corrected the problem.
It's kind of funny that way. But yeah, let's jump right into the episode recap since we've kind of already done that.
Let's do that.
Here's the description. Feeling ignored, Dewey finds a new family, a band of singing and dancing pirates looking to rob Scrooge blind. The episode aired originally on July 28th, 2018. Written by Madison Bateman and directed by Matthew Humphreys. So we've kind of already talked about the musical aspect of it, but let's get into our top moments. How about you? You go first.
Okay. So I feel like it's actually been kind of a long time since we've seen Launchpad in the show.
Yeah.
Or at least in any sort of prominent role. And so he was in the show, and he had quite a few good lines. And one of the best parts was the first time they attack, and they board the ship, they steal all the treasure, and they're singing and dancing, and then they leave, and Launchpad's stuck kind of singing the song. And I can't remember who it was. Was it Scrooge that said, "I can't believe you were distracted by that"? And then Launchpad says, "I can't believe you weren't."
Yeah.
"I'm going to have that song stuck in my head for days."
Yeah, and he sings it throughout the episode, especially any time they start singing.
Yep, he's right in there. Yeah, I thought he played a good role in this episode. It was nice to see him back.
Yeah, yeah. Launchpad has some great moments. He has a really good one. Once they're boarding the ship and everybody's kind of like standing around, talking about it, and Launchpad comes down and he's kind of like talking to them or whatever, and everybody's like, "Launchpad," and he looks over and he's like, "Oh," and that's kind of how the ship crashes. Launchpad, not the best pilot, but also a great pilot. They use him really well in this episode. He has some really funny moments. I really liked the aspect of Don Carnage, where, and this to me felt really true to the character from Tailspin, where he's getting upset about the missed cues. One of the things about Don Carnage in Tailspin is that he was never really that much of a threat. Like, the pirates were always something to worry about, but even though he's Don Carnage and he's kind of running around with a sword and they're shooting, it's interesting. In Tailspin, the Sky Pirates use the guns on their planes quite a bit. Constantly shooting at Baloo and Kit. And I mean, like, Kit will be like flying around on his
aerofoil or something.
Yeah, his little surfboard thing. And these pirates are just shooting at him. But nothing ever really happens, and Don Carnage is always kind of undercut by his own kind of ineptitude and his own sort of insecurities and that sort of thing.
Right.
And I feel like they translated that really well here, where he's definitely inept. But he's also, like, he's very nitpicky about the performance, and he's kind of more focused on the performance. It's like, they got this great score. They rob Scrooge blind. They get all this treasure, and they should be celebrating, but instead Don Carnage is like, "Yeah, you came in early on your cues." And
His thing is that you have to look good doing it.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that that was great. I thought that they really nailed that part of it, that sort of characterization. I really liked that.
Yeah, I liked that too. And that's my second moment, is the whole scene where Don Carnage gets kicked off of his own plane, which is something that happens a few times in Tailspin. And then he stumbles upon our team of heroes and dons a disguise. Mm-hmm. And it's just the most ridiculous disguise.
Yeah.
That was great. I loved it. It was funny. My kids loved that moment too. And that was... I felt like that was true as well. They played him very much like the original Don Carnage. I thought it was very true to his character.
Yeah.
When we get all of these extremely, extremely different takes, like Mama Crackshell and Doofus Drake, they're so different, but they stuck very close to the way we are used to Don Carnage. So I thought that was really good. And just, he had a caterpillar for a mustache.
Yes. The caterpillar for a mustache was too good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved that. My second favorite moment is it's really brief. It's a really brief gag, but I in the midst of everything getting stolen, Louis manages to hold on to the diamond that he's kind of coveting. And at the early in the episode, he's looking at all at everything as, you know, with the value of it, the resale value and that sort of thing. And he gazes into the diamond, and the diamond sort of speaks back to him. And we talked about this on the last episode. I talked about Louis, and the reason why I like him so much is because he's sort of riding the line between one of the good guys and one of the bad guys. It's like, because he's one of the triplets, he's by default one of the good guys, but his actions kind of speak louder than that. And this is a really great example of that. When he looks into this diamond, he's like, oh, I should probably put this with him. No, you should keep this for yourself. You should don't tell anybody. and later in the episode, when he refers to it as the soul diamond or whatever, and Scrooge is like, what? And he looks at it, and it's got the price tag, $29.50, made in Macaw. And it turns out that Webby just bought it at the gift shop, and it has no magical properties, which means that Louis was just being selfish. Yeah. I love that. Yep, I just right. that's
but the thing is, he honestly thought that there was like the little shoulder devil convincing him to do that.
Yeah he so thought I was like a cursed object. Yeah,
he thinks he's better than he actually is.
Yeah so I really loved that. I loved that whole sort of, like, it wasn't even a B plot, a C plot, or anything. It was more of like a D or an E plot, but because it was just kind of these three moments in the episode. But yeah. But I just loved it because it was that Louis characterization that I love. So
yeah, that's great. My final moment is just the overall animation in this episode. I really liked. Mm-hmm. I thought there was just some, especially because you're putting dancing and all the choreography in there. It was well timed. There was some great scenes with dancing and such. I really like, you really notice it in this one. A lot of the smears and swipes in this show,
yeah,
because it is traditional animation rather than, you know, kind of just moving the pieces around on a computer. You actually put in these smears and these swipes, and you can see every time Don Carnage swipes his sword that the drawings are just great as to indicate the motion and the movement there. And little things like there's at the very end when the team is getting back onto the Sun Chaser and Scrooge loads his treasure up into his hat to try and take some back. And it's just really small in the frame, but he does this waddle up onto into the Sun Chaser.
Yes.
And it's just like, he could have just walked, or they could have just not shown it at all, but they decided to put that little thing in there. And it's those little bits that make all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this episode really nailed the animation and had some really great moments. And it was such a great marriage of the traditional animation with the computer generated stuff that augments the show so often.
Right. Well, all of the the ships that were in this episode were all totally CG.
Yeah. So like the combination of the CG airplanes with the 2D animated characters, I just thought that they nailed it. Like they did such a good job. And sometimes that can be a little bit jarring, to have two animation styles side by side like that, but they did a really good job of melding the two in this one. I still like, this is a pet peeve of mine that, animation is very seldom running at 24 frames a second. There's often a lot of cheats of sort of, sort of skipping frames in order to imply motion and just kind of like getting away with dropping stuff.
Well, TV is never, TV animation is never on ones. It's on twos at the very most.
Yeah. So, and I guess not even 24, it's 30 on for television, right? So 29.97, I think, technically for NTSC, which is North American, right. Which is what they would be animating to. So yeah, like generally it's going to have a little bit more of like a staccato sort of movement to it. And DuckTales has a really great edgy, kind of like, I really great keyframes, like really, really strong keyframe poses. And then, like you said, in this episode, there was a lot of really great stuff with the sword fighting and the airplanes and the dancing and everything, where they were they did kind of go that extra little bit, but it really bothers me because 2D animation works on that level, and then 3D animation is really easy because you're just setting keyframes and then the computer fills in the rest, that you end up with a very fluid motion. And yes, so the planes are running at that 30 frames a second. And to me, it's like that I've seen it a couple of times, and they actually, they do it really well in Japanese animation. So like within anime and, some of the stuff coming out of Japan right now, where they are using CG to augment it and to add to a traditionally animated show, and they'll actually drop the frames, like you said, like they'll go on the twos, right? So it's kind of half the frames that you would normally expect, but it melds it better, especially when you're going for that cel shaded style. Yeah. So this is just one of those instances where, although they did a really good job, the characters are perfectly synchronized with all of these computer generated elements. And that's what I'm talking about when I say that they did a really good job of melding these two animation styles. Mm-hmm. I would have really liked it if they would have gone that extra step and made sure that the CG elements were animated in the same sort of frame rate as the 2D animation. But that's also a stylistic choice, and that's been throughout the series. So it's noticeable in this episode because there's so much of it, but it's been throughout the entire series. It's always been.
It has, yeah. Well, and it's a far cry from, like, I think of like Spider-Man, the animated series from the 90s, when he's web swinging through the town, and the town is completely CG, but he's not, and it's like, we've come a long way in our ability to
absolutely to
blend those two styles together.
And I think that the difference there is that when Spider-Man was being done, the character animations were being done very traditionally,
it was still
inked cells, right?
Like, still painted on cells,
painted,
and
cells.
They really, some of that stuff was even on threes and maybe even on fours. It was like some of it was so choppy
and recycled animations and all that sort of thing
all the time. Yeah, so took a lot of shortcuts.
A lot of shortcuts. But as traditional animation starts to cross into and sort of becomes a hybrid, which like we talk about DuckTales as being traditionally animated because we're talking about the character models being hand drawn, but it is a hybrid because they are using digital techniques to ink the characters, and they're obviously coloring it digitally.
But they're still drawing the frames.
But they are still, it is still from pencil drawings. And it is traditional in that sense, but it's bridging the gap, right? So, and the point of that is that when you have these, when the finished product, the finished animation is actually a digital asset, even though it's based on traditional hand-drawn keyframes and such, those elements are so much easier to manipulate and put into the CG environment. So that definitely helps get you there, right? So I think the fact that you talk about the Spider-Man stuff, it's like the CG looks like full CG, the traditional stuff looks like full traditional, but when you talk about DuckTales, well, the CG is obviously trying to mimic the style of the traditional stuff, and the traditional stuff is being again augmented and enhanced by these new digital techniques like digital coloring and the digital inks. So
they just nicely meet in the middle.
They're meeting in the middle, and that's where you get that perfect sort of synergy. But just for my personal style, I would like to see them match the frame rate for the CG elements. The new Star Wars series, Star Wars Resistance, we haven't gotten to see any animation yet. We've only seen an officially released promotional image and a leaked promotional image, but it's meant to be very stylized after anime, and in particular, like the Miyazaki style, like the Studio Ghibli style.
Oh, interesting, really.
And I personally hope, and I'm torn by it, because like, if it were me, if I were art directing the series, I would be insisting that it stick to the same sort of like frame rate, and that very, because anime really uses a lot of like strong poses and staccato sort of movement in its animation style, and there's a lot of cheats in anime. And it kind of went from being like, okay, we're going to use these cheats, to being like, okay, now this is the signature style of a lot of these shows, right? So it's like when you think of like a Dragon Ball, and you think of them moving so fast that all you get are single frames of them, and then they turn into lines, and then they appear somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
And personally, I would want to lead into that stuff if you're going to go to an anime inspiration, but I know that the majority of the audience wouldn't follow you, right? So it's like, that's where I kind of get a little bit torn, and that I would apply that to DuckTales as well. Personally, I want to see them try and match the CG elements to the traditionally animated elements, right? Like I want it because I want it to be seamless, right? And mm-hmm. also like, where's the challenge in doing the CG stuff and just letting it look like CG? If you want these two things to be married, like let's go the extra mile and try and do that. And for all I know, you know, they did try it, and then they looked at it and went, no, it looks too choppy because they're computer animated elements. There's an element there that it's more noticeable when it's choppy. So I don't know, like it might be that they went down that road and then went, this doesn't work, pull it back, just leave it at 30 frames, right? So that's kind of one of those questions that I would ask of anybody who works on the show, if we ever get them on the podcast, because I'd be really curious to see how they arrived at some of the stylistic choices that they made. But yeah, so I like with Star Wars Resistance, I'm really waiting to see the show in action so that I can see what kind of fluidity they're going to give those characters, and whether or not they really are going to, because it's computer animated, but are they going to really go that extra mile to make it look like it's traditionally animated anime style. A really great example of it working really well is the new Dragon Ball Z fighting game, Dragon Ball Fighters. They mimic the style almost perfectly. Now it's a little bit more fluid than the original series, but they do at moments drop frames in order to mimic some of the elements, like the flames, like when they're powering up and stuff like that. Like they do it. It's very, very true to the source material. It's a higher fidelity than the source material, but it has the same essence, like that same sort of character to it. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. So yeah, that's kind of, when I talk about it, that's kind of what I'm talking about. But
right,
I haven't even said my last moment, my last top moment. It kind of ties into all of this. And it's the spotlight duel at the end of the episode.
Oh yeah. Really good.
First of all, the visual gag of using Huey, Dewey, Louie, and Webby interchangeably, because all of the lights kind of go to that emergency lighting, and so everybody's red, and without the colors you can't really tell them apart, and they all kind of toss the hat back and forth, and so I liked that gag. And then on top of that, what you were talking about before with the choreography and the swipes and just the phenomenal animation in this episode, this sequence shows it off so well. And
it does.
One of the best parts of it is when Don Carnage calls out to one of his pirate henchmen, like, find the follow light, and the spotlight goes to Scrooge. But it, like a real spotlight, it doesn't, in an animated fashion, go directly to him. It kind of like dances around him before it centers on him.
Right.
Which is a very like amateur community theater thing to do, right?
Totally.
So I loved that little, there were a lot of little touches in this episode like that. And throughout that sequence with the fighting and everything, I just thought that they really nailed a lot of those visual gags and it just worked really, really well for me. And then towards the end of it, Scrooge jumps down, and in the middle of this fight, he loses himself in that gold madness and starts filling his hat with gold and treasure. And like you said, as he walks up the ramp to it back into the plane, he's
just that waddle.
That waddle, so where it's kind of like got the full pants waddle going on, and he looks back, and he like bends backwards over, doesn't he, to yell? Kind of.
Oh, I don't remember.
I think he kind of like is sort of like a sideways bend over backwards sort of thing to yell. Mm-hmm. This is why the traditionally animated stuff is always going to be better than Flash. And I don't say that to sort of like talk down to Flash, because I think that there are some shows that are animated with Flash that are actually phenomenal. I think that there's a few that are really, really good. The new Tangled series is incredible, and it's very clearly Flash animated. They're doing such a good job of it, but they're really taking a lot of cues from traditional animation. And the thing that about traditional animation, and Curtis, you're the person who kind of turned me on to this idea. Years and years ago, you had posted a side-by-side or sort of like an examination of The Simpsons from like early seasons and then The Simpsons from a modern season. And the difference between them going off model to sort of accentuate a character moment and versus the newer seasons and like a show like
it's
Family
so
Guy,
stiff. Yeah.
It's always on model. And sometimes the characters will literally just be standing there with their lips moving. And that's the only thing animated on screen. And it might be three characters having a conversation and there's no animation. It's just lip sync.
There is a great clip, if you can find it, of a scene from Family Guy where they have blocked out in black everything that is not moving.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything that is moving, they just have a little box around the part that is moving. So you can only see the moving parts, and majority of the screen is black the entire time.
Yeah. And so when you go that traditionally animated route, you can do all of that great off-model character moment stuff. And that was such a great example of it. Scrooge walking outside of his normal walk cycle is not something that would normally be done when you're using Flash, because one of the reasons you use Flash is that you use a lot of keyframes and you reuse a lot of stock animation moments. So it's really great for a show there's a show on Teletoon. I think it aired in the States as well, called 16. And the studio that does it, they did 16 and they did Total Drama Island. I think that's what it was called.
Is it Nelvana that did those shows?
I think it was Nelvana.
Just check.
And for those shows, it worked really well, because 16 especially was more of a sitcom. It was more of an animated sitcom than it was a cartoon. So it was just about teenagers hanging out in the mall. And that's a perfect place to use very stock walk cycles and stuff, because you have a lot of scenes that are very similar, right?
Yeah.
But in something that you want to be cartoony and fun and adventurous, like DuckTales or Darkwing Duck or really any of the Disney Afternoon stuff, you want to have that off-model stuff
And it just gives you more freedom. It's just so much more freedom to do a whole ton of things.
Yeah, and even with Tangled, it's like it makes sense for them to use Flash because they're doing a simplified version of the fully computer-generated film, right? So those characters kind of exist within a bit of a reality. So the animated squash and stretch elements aren't there as much. They're there, but some characters more than others, like Maximus the horse obviously has a lot more than the human characters, but it is limited because you're kind of working within a pseudo reality, a hyper reality, right? But when you're doing DuckTales, it's like, look, the physics of the Iron Vulture swallowing the Scrooge's plane is the Sun Chaser. Is that what
Sun Chaser?
That's
what
it's called. Okay, swallowing the Sun Chaser. It's like those physics don't make any sense. Like that breaks down after a little bit, right? To the point where like the Sun Chaser is flying inside the Iron Vulture until it lands, right?
And I thought that was great.
It's a great gag, but it's outside of reality, right? It's definitely a cartoon moment. And I loved it as well because it's like it's hovering there until they put the ropes over it and then bring it down.
Well, it's not hovering, it's still moving forward.
Yes, that's
but
true.
in the context of like the Iron Vulture is still moving forward
in relative
either.
Speed. So stuff like that is obviously going to break reality and then they do all kinds of great squash and stretch on DuckTales. Like any animation, some characters more than others. If you want to see the best squash and stretch, it's always Glomgold.
Glomgold, yep, for
he
sure.
He is made of rubber bands and flubber. Like, that character just has no rules. And it's one of the things that makes him so much fun to watch. The Missing Links of Moorshire, especially in that episode, he's just all over the map. And I think we talked about it in that episode and it's a little it would be off-putting if it wasn't used so well and so funny. You would be like, oh man, they're really off model constantly. But his model is also, he's kind of just he's kind of like a jelly bean shape with a face, right? And arms. Yeah. I think that's it for a recap. Were there any real Easter eggs in this? I mean, like obviously it was chock full of Tailspin references in all of these character designs and moments.
Yeah. So, and the interesting thing is they didn't use any of the pirates' real names. Like I could definitely identify which one was Mad Dog and which one was Dump Truck.
Yeah,
but they didn't call them Mad Dog and Dump Truck. They had different names, so that was interesting. There's not. I usually watch these episodes two times, but I only watched this one once. So maybe there were some references or Easter eggs, but I didn't catch them. I guess we could note that Don Carnage, even though Darkwing was performed by Jim Cummings, Don Carnage was not performed by Jim Cummings in this episode. They gave his voice to somebody else named Jaime Camille, who I guess is in the show Jane the Virgin, but I've never seen that one. But he's also the voice of Panchito in the new Legends of the Three Caballeros show that's not on TV, but kind of on TV. it's a weird show right now. I think it was released in like the Philippines or something like that. But it was created and fully made like a couple of years ago. But that's another conversation.
And I think we could probably expect that if he's voiced that character in the past, that there's probably a good chance that he'll be voicing the character on DuckTales when that character shows up next season. So
yeah, I hope so.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
I think it makes sense to recast this character. Because I think in 2018, when you have a character that is vaguely ethnic, let's say, in its origin.
Well, that was the purpose of the originally. Yeah. Jim Cummings would say there he has no specific accent. He's made up of a bunch of different accents all in one.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I say he's like vaguely ethnic in the in the original incarnation. I think it was smart for them to do a stunt cast, first of all. And because this is a special guest character, it's not somebody who's going to be around all the time. Right. And to actually lean into that ethnicity, and the name Don Carnage kind of implies a little bit. And he is he's a coyote, right? I mean, he's intended to be a coyote. That's what I always thought.
I don't know. Maybe coyote. I thought maybe a fox.
Maybe a fox.
But I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, like I don't know. I feel like with the
but a coyote would make sense with sort of a Spanish Mexican.
Yeah. 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 Sort of that Southwest
that
sort of
ethnicity. Yeah. I guess.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that it was really smart. I think that it was a great casting. I think he did a great job. He did the character justice.
Yeah. And he's actually a trained opera singer.
Okay.
And so he's got the chops for a musical episode as well.
So that's probably one of the other pieces to it, right? Is that they wanted that. Not that Jim Cummings can't sing a tune, because he definitely can.
Oh, no, he's good.
He's got a great voice in that respect as well. But yeah, I don't know. And I think that it's actually really special and important that Jim Cummings is Darkwing Duck, and that potentially that's really of like that's the only character of note that he plays within DuckTales, because to me it's like, yeah, I love Jim Cummings and I think that he does so many great voices, but he's really defined by a handful of characters, like his Winnie the Pooh and Tigger, and Darkwing, and like there's a handful of characters that are associated with him. So I think having him sort of like coded specifically to Darkwing and to not hear his voice in other characters, it kind of makes it more special when Darkwing does show up and we hear his voice. So I don't know. I just
scheduling
think
that, also might not have worked out because he might have been too busy with the Christopher Robin movie.
Yeah.
Because I bet they were making these at the same time.
Probably. Yeah. Although, I mean, like, those characters don't talk a lot in Christopher Robin.
Okay.
Yeah. They do. I mean, like, they're there, but I don't know. I think that Jim Cummings, being the consummate professional that he is, probably could have knocked out all of his dialogue
in one session
probably. For that movie. And he probably sat down and did it 3 or 4 times over the course of them making the movie. He does a great job. The movie, by the way, is just a little mini review because we did go and see it on the weekend. Deceptively not what the trailers and commercials make it out to be. It is a very slow movie. It's not necessarily suited for a young audience, even though those characters are very obviously targeted at a young audience.
Kara, I didn't figure it was. It's just like because it's a adult rediscovering.
Yeah,
I figured it would have more of a grown up bend to it.
It's really a bummer for the first 2/3 of the movie.
Wow.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, like I might go into it in detail on a different podcast at some point, but I don't know. I found myself wanting to enjoy it more than I was enjoying it, which is really disappointing, because Ewan McGregor and Winnie the Pooh I thought was going to be a really great match, but
and the nostalgia as well.
Yeah, but the problem is that I feel like they wrote a very unlikable Christopher Robin, so I think on the page he would come off as unlikable, but they cast Ewan McGregor, who is infinitely likable. And so there's this real disconnect at the beginning of the movie where he does a few things and they seem really odd. And you're like, well, why don't you just explain that you need the weekend to work because there's people who are relying on you for their jobs. And then later in the movie, he has a line where he's basically like, oh, I don't really care about these people. Like I distance myself, so it's easier to fire them. Right. And you're like, oh, this is supposed to be like Hook, where like Peter Panning is a real jerk. And so you kind of hate him. And then when he turns into Peter Pan halfway through the movie, you're like, oh, thank God he's Peter Pan now. Right. And this movie right. follows that same trajectory. The movie is just Hook. It's Hook without bad guys. but it doesn't work because Robin Williams did such a good job of being unlikable in the first half of Hook, where you really kind of despise him to a certain point. And
Ewan McGregor doesn't pull that off.
Ewan McGregor doesn't pull that off because he just always comes off as sweet and innocent and charming. yeah. And not that he can't do it. Like, I mean, as an actor, I'm sure he could get there, but he didn't in this movie. And I feel like they kind of, I don't know, that and then like the fun and the sort of like exuberance and excitement of the trailers is not in the movie. I mean, it is, but it's not in as much of the movie as the trailers lead you to believe. Like it's, yeah. I would say out of the entire movie, it's probably about a fifth of the movie is wow. the like silly fun jokes with the Hundred Acre Wood characters. And it's okay. really mostly in the third act. So there's my mini review. It's worth going to see. I just don't know that I think like little kids might be okay with it because they like a lot of the sort of the morose subtext is going over their heads. But I think if like a kid between like 7 and 13, it's probably going to be bored to tears by the movie because it's dealing with a lot of like these adult themes that they're going to pick up on, but not understand and probably get frustrated by. So,
well, that is good to know.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, like, and that's obviously.
Go see Incredibles 2 again.
Or go see Teen Titans Go to the movies, right? Yeah, yes, I mean, like, definitely. That would be your recommendation, right?
Oh, man, that show was so good.
Halfway through the movie, I was sitting there going, like, I wish that we had gone to Teen Titans because I'm pretty sure I'd be having more fun and Kara would be more into it and totally. Less distracted and less, like, wanting to run around in the theater.
Yeah, Samantha loved Teen Titans Go. We took all three of them, so Samantha's 2.5, and she had a blast.
I think Kara and I might go this weekend. So
you should. Yeah. It's well worth your money. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Even if you've never seen an episode of the show, you'll just totally.
We have watched Teen Titans Go. Teen Titans Go, I think, is a great show. It's a phenomenal show.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, let's get back on track here.
Yeah, speaking of all of these kids, let's check in with our Junior Woodchucks.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Peter.
My name is Milo.
And today we are going to do the episode Sky Pirates in the Sky.
And this is the Junior Woodchucks podcast.
Oh yeah, I forgot to say that. So, if you might remember, a few pirates usually sail the seas, but these pirates sail the skies.
They don't sail the seven seas. I guess they sail the seven skies.
So, before we look into that, I'd say we look into this. So, Milo, what do you think's the seven skies? Where do you think it is?
I kind of made it up.
Okay, Milo and I are just being ridiculous. Matt, Milo, what's your favorite part?
When they sang the song.
And Milo, what was different between both two songs?
One song had the real pirate captain in it, and the other song had Dewey in it.
Okay. And my favorite part was the one you just said, the one with Dewey in it. And Milo, what's your favorite part?
You mean?
I mean, what's your funny? What's the funniest part for you?
When Launchpad's tried to turn on the plane and it doesn't work, and he says, "No, we're not going anywhere," and he starts to sing the song.
And I'm guessing you know what my favorite part is, right, Milo? Funny. So how
you have to say it?
I bet you know. It's when Launchpad's driving and then Huey says, "Wait, is that compass a sticker?" And then he was like, "Wait, is that Radar Antworm? It's actually really funny. And so, Milo. So, in total, what would be your favorite, like, from here to later, what would be your, like, favorite episode?
I'd say this this one is mine.
I have to say it off the microphone.
I'm pretty sure this one's mine.
Mine is...
Milo signing out.
Mine is... Well, actually, I like all of them. And...
I have to choose one.
I don't know. Anyways, thanks for, like, joining us, like, listening to our podcast. I hope you could, like... come again soon, but first Milo and me have to do the lucky dime rating, and before that he has to say something.
I'm going to say it
up. Oh, never mind. So Milo, lucky dime rating.
Well, I would say a 5.
I'd say 40 cents. That equals like 4 plus another 5. Because of the captain, like, made a mustache that was a caterpillar. It was really also funny. That, I'd say, add 5 cents. So, Milo, if we combine that together, that would be, like, 95 cents.
Don't forget that I love pork.
Anyways...
Do not delete. Do not.
This is our best episode. We've got a record. Now that you like our episodes, really like them, maybe you could like watch more. Because they're like really good. It's because we watch them a lot. Anyways, just tune in next time. Because this is the Junior Woodchuck Podcast. Bye.
See you next afternoon!
Okay, so lucky dime rating. Mike, let's hear it.
Yeah, oh boy. This one's dead center for me. It's dead center 25 cents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's not that it's bad. It's just that, like, this is one that I don't think I'll go back and rewatch very often. If it happened to be on, I'm not going to necessarily turn it off. But if I've got access to any episode, I'm not going to watch this one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a 3. I enjoyed, like I said, the animation was just great. But the repetitiveness of the song, which isn't entirely an interesting song to begin with, was just kind of a bummer. I love Don Carnage, and I hope I see him again in the show. But yeah, it was not. It doesn't rank as high as some of these other episodes, that's for sure.
Yeah, cool. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it fares in our episode ranking. What's the update on that? From the last episode.
Okay, this is really, really interesting because Agent 22 beat Beware the Buddy System for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But because, let's see, the other Brenda Scrooge McDuck must have stolen all of Agent 22's fans because Agent 22 only came away with 16% of the vote, so it's out.
Okay.
Golden Lagoon still in there with 24%, Beware the Buddy System 28%, and the other bin got 32% of the votes this week.
Interesting, because I think you and I were kind of a little bit on the positive side of center with that episode.
Right.
And yet it seems to have struck a chord with the fans. So,
well, and I think that a lot of it has to do with this is a mythology episode.
Yeah.
So that those ones always seem to rank high. If you look at the three that are, I guess Beware the Buddy System isn't an anthology episode, but Golden Lagoon wasn't either. Maybe my theory's just off, but I think those ones always tend to get a little bit more attention.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Cool. Well, so Agent 22 is going to be out, and we'll stick Sky Pirates in there and see what happens with that.
Definitely.
Awesome. What's our next episode?
The next episode is The Secrets of Castle McDuck. On a family trip to Scrooge's ancestral castle, Dewey tries to hide the truth about his mom as his brothers search for family secrets. Graham McTavish from The Hobbit Trilogy and Ashley Jensen from Ugly Betty star as Scrooge's parents, Fergus and Downey Duck, respectively. Now, I have to wonder how, if Scrooge is as old as he is,
how old are
his parents? Unless they're just shown in flashbacks or something, I guess.
But
we've seen some promo art, and they're like face to face.
Yeah, I think they might be ghosts.
Oh, okay. That could be.
Yeah. This episode, and obviously because we're behind, right? I'm watching these sort of as we go. I don't want to get ahead.
Right. I haven't watched this one yet.
Yeah. So I haven't watched this one yet. But the scuttlebutt on the internet is that this episode is great. So I'm really excited to watch it. I've been kind of waiting. With these last two episodes, we're getting closer to caught up, and hopefully in the next little bit we can record these next two for Secrets of Castle McDuck and Last Crash of the Sun Chaser, which should bring us up to date in time for Shadow War for the season.
Yes, definitely.
So
we can do it, Mike. We can do it.
I think so. I think we got this. I think we got this.
Okay.
But I'm really looking forward to this episode specifically.
Yes, me too.
Cool. But that does it for Sky Pirates in the Sky. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Yep. See you next afternoon.
Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest DuckTales news by heading to cartoonafternoon.com, where you'll find everything DuckTales and Disney cartoon related for the shows that we cover. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ToonAfternoon, as well as on Twitter at ToonAfternoon. And if you want to send us an email, you can do that by sending us an email at ToonAfternoon@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Twitter. You can find me at Curtis Findlay, KurtisFindlay.
And I'm on Twitter at ArkWulf, ArkWulf. And don't forget that we are part of the Thunderquack Podcast Network. Head to thunderquack.com to check out all the other great podcasts in our network. And if you want to support us, you can do that two ways. First, by heading to store.thunderquack.com to pick up some merch. Or you can head to patreon.com/thunderquack and pledge your support over there. It's a monthly pledge. As low as $1 a month gets you access to the exclusive Thunderquack podcast, as well as the Thunderquack Patreon Facebook group. So that's patreon.com/thunderquack. And thank you to everybody who does support us over there.
Disney Dad's Cartoon Afternoon is not associated with the Disney company in any way. All characters, titles, music, and everything is all copyright of their respective owners. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Disney Dad's Cartoon Afternoon.